Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with Chris DeBona, episode 16 for February 21st, 2007. Jeff Waugh. We're back. Hard to believe. It isn't Floss Monthly. It isn't Floss Yearly. It's going to be Floss Weekly. But there's been a good reason why we've been gone. I'm Leo Laporte, and Chris DeBona's on here from his office at the special place in Mountain View.
Special place.
Are you back? The special place for the special people.
The Jenkins Home for the Criminally Insane?
That's no, it. Right. Yeah. Arkham Academy. Arkham Asylum.
No, Arkham Asylum, yeah.
He has been on maternity, or I guess you'd call it paternity leave.
That's true, because my wife did the hard work.
She did. You know, so. Well, you're doing the hard work now, I bet.
Well, you know, it's not so hard. He's a good baby.
So,
you know?
Laszlo Valentino DeBona.
That's right. My new kid.
Born in December.
Mm-hmm.
And is he sleeping through the night yet?
You know, he sleeps like a baby does. He needs to be fed and that kind of thing.
How's
yeah,
it been
no,
though,
he's,
for you?
It's been great. You know, both him and his sister, Franny, you know, we're both extremely easy kids at this age.
You're lucky.
Yeah, yeah, I am.
And how does Franny like her new brother?
She's a little jealous. She like came in. She said, but Daddy, it's not fair that Laszlo gets to sleep with you guys, but I don't get to sleep with you guys. And, you know, we'd say, well, Franny, you know, you slept. That's for the first couple of years, yeah. Swear to God. And she keeps running in every once in a while. So it's like, you know.
But
she's actually really sweet. When she goes to bed, she kisses him on the forehead and that kind of thing. So. It's very sweet.
There's nothing more wonderful. That's great. And you took 2 months off?
No, actually, I only took about a month off. And then the way that paternity works in California, you can actually break it up. So I'm going to take another month off in the fall. And,
That's great. Well, we're glad to have you back. And we're coming back with a fun guest, Jeff Waugh. You want to tell
That's
us
right.
about him?
So Jeff Waugh is sort of an old hand. Was involved with GNOME and then Ubuntu, and he's helping to run the LinuxConf AU conference that just happened in Australia.
We should mention that we recorded it before the conference, so we're talking about it's coming up.
Right. Yeah,
too late. You missed it.
Earlier. So when you hear us talking about it, just imagine us going yeah 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 yeah. Yeah, you don't get to go.
We were there. Did you go?
I didn't. I decided that I'd rather stay home with my kid.
I don't blame you.
Yeah. I ended up going to New Zealand a couple weeks later anyway. So I couldn't picture going there, coming back, back.
No. Yeah. Once a year is more than that's such a long flight.
Yeah. You know, I don't need 20,000 miles on my freaking fire card that badly.
Well, we'll talk to Jeff, and we're glad you're back. Next week, Mad Dog, John Hall will be on, who is kind of the original Unix and Linux evangelist.
That's right.
And we've got lots of great guests planned for you. So welcome back, Chris. Congratulations. It's welcome to a new Linux user, Laszlo Valentino DeBona. What a great name, by the way.
Yeah, I love the name.
Love it. You call him Laz?
We've been calling him Laz at home,
The Laz. Is Laszlo a family name, or are you just...
No, I just like it, you know, and my wife is indulgent of her husband, so... And she wanted something Italian in there. I'm like, well, how about Valentino? That's a pretty cool name.
There you go.
Well, you know, I have to realize, so my name's Chris, which is like the plainest name ever.
You're making up for it now.
And I'm making up for it with my kids.
I love it. All right, well, here's Jeff Waugh.
How did you get started in open source software?
So I started using bits and pieces of open source stuff, you know, Apache and a little Linux firewall and things like that. And I that was sort of after my kind of university stuff. And I kind of remember back in high school, I had a friend at school who'd been playing around with Linux. And my very first experience was connecting serial ports to each other's machines and playing NetHack and stuff on each other's machines and thinking that was the most amazing thing in the world. But then, you know, once I started really getting into it a few years later, gosh, what wasted years I spent in the Windows wilderness. I bumped into one of my ex-girlfriend's dads, and he said, come along to this trade show. You've got to check out this Linux stuff. So I went along and he introduced me to the City Linux Users Group people, and then encouraged me to run for the Slug committee, which seemed completely crazy, but anyway, I did it. And then a couple of guys who had run for the committee that year said, hey, we're trying to do this conference and bring all these awesome free software people out to Sydney. And that conference ended up being LinuxConf AU 2001.
Oh, my gosh.
At which point, all these cool young people in Sydney kind of met up, and we all started, you know, getting into our open source careers and stuff like that from there. And now, 6 years later, I've been GNOME release manager, board of directors on GNOME, working with a bunch of other free software projects, spent 2.5 years at Canonical, and bizarrely enough, it took about 6 years to get back to thinking, hey, we should have LinuxConf AU in Sydney again. So in January next year, I'm the lead organizer of LinuxConf AU in Sydney, which seems like the silliest idea ever, but we're doing it.
Is there not an annual Linux conference in Australia?
Yeah, there is. That's LCA, yeah, but that's it's LCA. It migrates around.
How is LinuxConf AU different from LCA?
Well, it's the same thing.
Oh.
Same thing.
It's linux.com.
I got it.
Sorry, we got all jargony on you.
LCA, I got it.
In the industry, we refer to those as acronyms.
Yeah.
So there's actually two Linux conferences, frankly, that matter from the kernel and sort of hardcore Linux geek perspective, and that's OLS and LCA. So,
really?
Yeah. Wow. And they're about 6 months apart from each other, and OLS is in Ottawa, and LinuxConf AU is, of course, in Australia,
so this
or
isn't,
points south.
This isn't just some rump conference. This is the conference.
Linus and Alan and Andrew Morton, and yeah, it's the big deal. It's the big shoe.
And it's coming up.
Totally awesome conference, and it migrates all around Australia. Every year, it's a completely new volunteer team.
Last year was in New Zealand.
Yeah. That's right. We shared it with our sheep-loving friends in New Zealand.
Are you saying they love sheep more than you?
Yeah, truly, they do.
Okay.
Apparently, we have this joke about each other, but they have more sheep per capita than we do.
Oh, well, there you go.
We won't go into the joke or lose our clean rating on iTunes.
But it's coming up January 15th to 20th, and you're going to be in New South Wales.
Sydney, New South Wales.
Cool.
Like, what, about 12 kilometers out of the city, or whereabouts?
No, very, very close to the city. So it's a short bus ride away from the CBD, very close
the
to
central
awesome
business district.
Places to stay.
Yeah.
It's going to be at the uni.
Yeah. What Jeff isn't telling you is, I basically, I got him on chat day before yesterday saying, so where is this place exactly? And do you speak English there? And do you have power and television? You know, stuff like that. So
as long as you got Wi-Fi, I don't care about the rest of it.
Well, you know, I've been to Australia like 3 times, you know, twice for LinuxConf AU. So,
well, that's cool. So this is a big event.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
It's like, it's one of the only conferences that Linus bothers to go to. We have speakers who say to us, like, they'll come back every single year. They don't want to miss it for the world. It's really cool.
And, you know, I guess it's worth pointing out that you have to have these outside of the United States, don't you?
Yeah, for sure. Some of us can't get into the United States.
Well, there's that, but also there's some people who won't go to the United States. This is a fairly controversial kind of funny thing.
Ever since Sklyarov, or?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
People just like, I don't want to risk it.
And when you say some of us can't get into the United States, Jeff, is that political or legal?
Little bit of politics, little bit of legal. If you guys get Mark Shuttleworth on the show at some point, ask him about his experiences getting into the United States whenever he has to.
It's painful, I know.
Oh, yeah.
And on behalf of the U.S. Customs and TSA, I apologize.
Well, that's actually Leo's fault.
It's my fault. I take full responsibility.
Well, we're all citizens of the United States.
No, but actually, it is important to mention that there are a great many computer scientists who won't come to the U.S. because of our laws.
For a lot of people, this is ancient history, but a fellow by the name of Dmitry Skylarov came into the United States and was arrested on his way to DEF CON, where he was going to talk about
cracking Adobe's e-books format.
Exactly, the PDF e-book stuff.
Won't someone think of the children?
Someone think of the children who are reading books.
Unfortunately, in Australia, they're importing our fabulous copyright laws, either by law or by bilateral convention, which is a shame. And I blame WIPO, the World Intellectual Property Organization. But that's a good conversation for another time. But the upshot of it is it's a shame. But no great Linux conference is any longer held in the U.S. or open source conference of any kind.
Yeah, I think that people don't understand how that impacts scholarship and sort of industrial interaction in the States, which we want, right? As a country, we want people to be able to do this kind of thing here.
Yeah, but if scientists are also afraid of coming here because they'll get prosecuted.
Yeah, they just won't come. Okay. They don't have to.
They don't have to.
Know? That's the scary thing for a lot of folks. They don't know that.
Yeah.
So.
And it's pretty rough here because we're importing your DMCA.
Yes, you are.
Through the free trade agreement. So there's a bunch of Aussie hackers who are now pretty concerned, considering moving to, you know, New Zealand.
There's nowhere to run to ultimately, though, because...
Yeah, I mean, we're going to export it everywhere we can, so we have to fight for it here, too. So
I think that's the key, is instead of running, let's fight the fight and get rid of this stuff.
Yeah.
Everyone move to the U.S.
Well, yeah. No. So TWiT has covered some interesting things with Cory Doctorow around the World Trade Organization, World Intellectual Property Organization. We could do that whole thing here, too.
We don't need to, because, I would refer people to any Cory Doctorow
TWiT is
appearance
so
on
TWiT. Fabulous that...
We have talked about it a lot, and it is an important subject, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you were working at Ubuntu for how long, Jeff?
Yeah, I was with Canonical, the company that sponsors Ubuntu, for 2.5-3 years. That was one heck of a crazy adventure. I met Mark Shuttleworth in Sydney in very early 2004 after he spoke to a friend of mine, Robert Collins, who had been working at that point on Squid and the Arch revision control system. And Mark clearly wanted distributed revision control as part of his plan, and insisted that I come down to meet Mark. And the first thing that Mark said is, "I'm going to create a Linux distribution." At which point I thought, "Oh my God, what is Rob getting me into? This is insane."
had you met Mark before? Is this your first encounter with him?
Kind of. No, this is the astronaut wants to start a Linux distribution.
Linux in space.
Exactly, my gosh. So this is the first time I'd met him, and I knew him only by name. And well, actually, the plea that Rob said to get me down there, because I just spent 2.5 hours at lunch telling my staff at the time at an ISP that was going down the gurgler that we had 90 days to go, and so Rob was desperately trying to get me to come down to Circular Quay, and finally he said, "Have you ever met anyone who's been to space?" I said, "No." And he says, "Do you want to?" Well, yeah. Then he said, "There might be a job in it." And I was like, "Right, okay, done."
Did you think you'd be doing Linux in space?
I did have great hopes that we would have a moon base like Google, but, you know.
We don't talk about the moon base.
There can be only
anymore.
One.
We had a problem there with the teleporter.
So what did Mark tell you he wanted to do? I mean, obviously a distro, but what was the game plan?
Well, it was fascinating. Like from the ominous start of the conversation, he actually mapped out what he wanted to do, what he wanted to achieve, and the gap in the market. And it was fascinating because not only was it all so true at the time, but as it's mapped out over the last 3 years, all of it has happened. Basically, what he wanted to do was create a fully free distribution and get away from the whole enterprise versus community dual play thing going on,
like the Fedora Red Hat Enterprise, that duality, you mean?
Yeah, that's right. And ship it every 6 months, make it one CD, have an awesome, beautiful desktop, tactile. So, you know, I mean, it's amazing. You show people a Linux desktop and they go, "Wow, holy crap, I know how this works. It has icons."
Right, right.
And then they buy 100 Linux servers because Linux is suddenly real to them. You know, it's this bizarre thing that the desktop makes it real. So, you know, very much a strong desktop play to begin with. And then in terms of the business model, clearly it was always going to be a well-funded startup with Mark involved. But... To create a business network around the world of companies working on it, rather than just having this one monolithic business, building a very, very tight development team in Canonical and then building the business around the world around that. And it's been fascinating to watch the growth in the community of people buying into it, because we had the best people with the best backgrounds to put something like this together. And then the business uptake of it has mapped out very much along the lines that Mark was planning on, but about two times faster than he thought it would.
It's interesting. I mean, what you just described is exactly what Ubuntu was and became. He obviously had the vision right from day one.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's fascinating to sort of think back at all of the things that we did and decisions that we made and how close it was all the way through to what his initial thoughts were and ideas were and what the value points would be. You know, making sure that we had a really fantastic community to go with a lickable, desirable, awesome
lickable
product.
I think
it's got to be lickable.
I think that's a Steve Jobsism, borrowed for the open source.
Well, I was actually thinking of the one interesting decision about putting especially lickable people as backgrounds.
Yeah.
You should tell us about that.
Wait a minute. I'm missing something because all I see is the dry brown desert. Is there more somewhere that I'm?
There was.
Oh, there's plenty more underneath those clothes.
Where do I find that?
Well, you'll have to go back and look at some of the
earlier
artwork
ones?
We had.
Okay.
What happened was we had some some of the very early initial meetings when, you know, there are about 10 people. And Mark showed us this picture, and it was of a girl called Sabrina, or at least that's the name that he gave her. And it was a very, it was like sepia tone, Vaseline on the lens kind of shot. And it was a very beautiful shot, but it was a girl with her face turned away, but her breasts are perfectly visible. And he was saying to everyone, this is what I want the desktop to look like. And the rationale, part of it, fantastic. The other part of it, little bit of crack smoking going on.
Yeah.
The part that he got absolutely right was the brand message of Ubuntu with Linux
Naked
for human
people.
Beings.
Yeah. Linux for attractive female human beings.
Oh, no, we had naked
boys too?
Well. Oh, yeah, no. It was both sexes. But nobody
right.
noticed the boys.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, right.
Sabrina was the inspiration. I'll get to the real artwork in a sec. But he wanted to have it earthy and flesh tones because, you know, how many products have you seen around that are that have that earthy flesh tone kind of thing? Technology products.
Right. They're more chrome and metal. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And that kind of blue, that very distancey blue that you see throughout every technology thing. Ugh. So that was awesome. But then he started talking about, you know, our initial market, and this shows how clever Mark is about understanding, you know, the way that the market grows in open source. Our initial market is going to be young males. So the live CD should have, you know, naked people on the backgrounds and stuff like that. So we ended up...
Well, you're pretty much going to guarantee young males and nothing else, but okay.
That's right. So for the preview release, we shipped this terribly boring blue desktop background and an Ubuntu logo. But people dug the whole idea, like all of the technology things that were going on, you know, one CD, Debian, Python, GNOME, all that kind of stuff. And unfortunately, I got to be the person to upload the controversial artwork with...
That's your fault, then.
Yeah, pretty much. It was three South African models. One Caucasian girl, one black girl, and one kind of Middle Eastern-looking guy. There were kind of suggestive poses that they were all in and stuff. It was really funny in a kind of scary kind of
disastrous way.
But the amazing thing about it is that it did two things. First, it showed us how far the idea of Ubuntu had got around the world and around the community, because we had complaints from everywhere. You know, we had complaints from people who wanted to run Ubuntu in their cyber cafe, in their church, but decided that, you know, perhaps with this artwork it wouldn't be appropriate. You know, people from Malaysia, Iraq, like seriously everywhere. And this is like within a month of the very first preview release. So it was already, you know, exploding at that point. And then what ended up happening is we had a community meeting that Mark moderated. So it kind of demonstrated to everyone that Mark is actually a human being. He's not some scary space guy. And he's not just flinging his money at this project to see what sticks. And we had a really cool community meeting where people raised their concerns and we talked about, you know, what we could do and why the branding was done this way and what the purpose was. And then ended up going with something more conservative, didn't have people in the images and stuff like that.
So but, I understand his theory, which is let's humanize this, and he just maybe misunderstood how it would be taken.
Well, honestly, he also, you know, the pictures themselves weren't that bad.
Yeah, I'm trying to find them online, and unfortunately, I can't seem to. But
it's just, you know, they're pretty mellow.
Looking for nude, Ubuntu,
but it's like,
naked, Ubuntu, breasts, Ubuntu. I can't find anything. You know,
I wish I would have the energy to spend the time, you know, after this.
I got nothing better to do. Anyway, that so, you know, and what's good is he listened. He paid attention.
Yeah,
great things came out of it. And people really understood, you know, what we were trying to do. And, you know,
and frankly, to his credit, I didn't even know this story. I mean, he moved quickly enough that it didn't become that well known.
Yeah, and it was also very early.
Within our early community.
Right. Just as long as we're talking about Mark and Ubuntu, what do you think of his letter to the OpenSUSE forum?
So it's funny. I wrote a very similar letter on my... This is Chris. I wrote a very similar letter on my blog saying, you know, here's my short response to all this Novell hullabaloo. We're hiring, you know?
Right.
Now, he did that...
But that's on your blog. That's
yeah,
a different
and
thing.
He did it on the OpenSUSE mailing list, which right. is a bit more cheeky. But I thought it was, I have to admit, I guess I like chaos more than the average person. I thought it was kind of funny.
We should say he wrote to the mailing list saying, you know, if you're disgruntled about the Novell-Microsoft alliance.
You should be.
you should be. Yeah. Leave OpenSUSE and come to work for us, which is considered poaching. And I guess it's kind of not done in the open source community. I don't know. He got some heat for
well,
it.
Well, I think there's kind of two differences. Chris, I thought your blog was really funny. Partly because of its brevity, but Chris talked about Novell and posted in his blog. Mark posted to a community mailing list and talked about bringing developers over from the community. So I was pretty strongly disappointed in it because I think there's a big difference between making statements about a company and making statements about the about a community, and that idea of poaching, right? I think, you know, no holds barred, poaching from Novell is not a serious problem. You know, go for it. They're a company. They have their ways of defending themselves, and, you know.
They're big. They can deal with it, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas that kind of approach within the open source community is always going to be controversial. Any kind
yeah,
of
that's true.
In a community is pretty rough. But he did come out and apologize pretty quickly. After it, and that was good. I was concerned that there might be a bit of frustration within the Ubuntu community, and that it might be a forced apology or something like that. But he realized the mistake he made, which was really, I think, that distinction between community and company. We've said something in the GNOME project that we had as the topic of one of our IRC channels for a while is hug a Novell engineer today because it's not their fault.
Whose fault is it?
Well, you know, it's Novell management and Microsoft, but all of our friends in the Novell engineering who we work with every day, we've known for years, they're, you know, as crazy open source dudes as us. It's not their problem, and it's really worrying when they get attacked for this kind of stuff. Many of them are as concerned as we are to a certain extent. So
yeah, well, it's funny, you know, most of them didn't even find out until about 3 days before everyone else did, right, in the whole world. So it's it was really scary for them, I think, you know, for the, you know, the engineers, the line engineers, you know.
We haven't done a show since that happened. I mentioned as soon as it happened, I sent a note to Chris saying, let's get Eben Moglen on again to talk about
it. We're going to try to do that like next week.
And Eben wanted, understandably, to really look at it and analyze it before he came out. He's very measured in his responses, and I don't blame him. So
luckily, we don't have that problem with you, Jeff.
Yeah. oddly enough, I've actually been very cautious, and I haven't blogged about it yet because I've been... You know, waiting for the you know, it took them a long time to get the fact details out and for, you know, various people to talk about and stuff. I actually got to talk to Nat Friedman on the morning that it happened. Unfortunately, that I kind of woke up and everyone on IRC was talking about this crazy stuff. And then my phone rang. So I was like, oh, holy shit, what's going on? So I didn't really get to grill Nat too hard. But yeah, no, I haven't said anything really public about it yet either.
Do you want to?
It's been a few weeks now. You've had time to think about it.
You've had time to let it settle through your brain. I mean, the disturbing thing for me was that it was like, so Microsoft's going to let us develop Linux. you know, if we paid.
Well, and also for Novell to say, okay, now if you use SUSE, you're indemnified.
Yeah.
Seemed a little.
But not against patents.
Right.
See, this is the thing that was kind of weird. They're like, so we're indemnifying you. And we're like, from what? Well, from Microsoft suing you. About what? Well, you know, we don't know. So.
Just in case.
Oh, just in case. So is this about patents? No, it's not about patents. Then Steve Ballmer says, yeah, it's about patents.
Yeah, Ballmer was pretty clear what it was about.
It was really clear.
Ballmer had no doubt.
Yeah, there's no editorial there. You know?
It's like, oh, yeah, we're going to sue you.
The amazing thing about all of this is that in practical terms, you look through the agreements, and really it doesn't stand for anything. Basically, what they've said is that we're not going to act like gutter trash to each other's customers, which, seriously, like, you know, who sues other companies' customers for patents? You know, it's like the companies like SCO when they're going down the tubes and they have nothing left to do.
I guess the point was that Microsoft had apparently funded the SCO effort, so it almost looked like a continuation of this SCO suit.
Or the effort behind it.
The effort behind it, yeah. Well, it's clearly FUD on Microsoft's part. Right.
Yeah, it's funny, you know. There was a couple things that happened that week that I think are more connected than other people are thinking. So Oracle, just a week before the Novell announcement, said, "Hey, you know, we're going to be shipping, you know, a Red Hat like distribution, and offering support for half the price of a Red Hat." Right. And everyone's like, well, that's typical Oracle. They were upset about the JBoss deal, so they're going to come out and try to hurt Red Hat and get more customers, da-da-da-da, right? So, but there are other people who think, well, you know what? I don't think that deal was going to happen. The Novell-Microsoft deal was going to happen that quickly, that it was going to take a little bit longer. And Oracle found out about it and was trying to kind of scoop them, right? Which is very in character for Oracle.
Yeah, that's a Larry Ellison kind of thing to do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he did the same thing with Informix when he announced support for Linux just of the Oracle database, right? It's really... So I think it's interesting. I think a lot of things happened that week. And the thing that was most kind of torqued me a little bit was the explicit support for the OpenXML format by Novell.
Yeah.
Because they have a number of engineers who work on OpenOffice, and they're like, okay, we're all going to do OpenXML now instead of ODF. I'm like, wow, that's kind of important. You know, nobody noticed it. I feel like I was like this crank standing at the top of a subway. Like, did you notice the OpenXML thing? And they're like, oh, what are you talking about, crazy man? You know?
Well, that alone would make it worthwhile from Microsoft's point of view.
Oh, you know, Microsoft got a lot out of the deal. You know? I don't know what Novell got, but I know what Microsoft got. Well, Novell got $350 million, right?
Yeah. So as a Linux developer, Jeff, do you think there's any merit to the notion that there's Microsoft code in Linux?
So Linux kernel, highly unlikely that Microsoft code is in there, but it's highly likely that we have stuff in the whole stack that Microsoft patents cover. Because basically we have stuff in our whole stack that everyone's patents cover because people can get patents on the most ridiculous things these days.
Right. Well, and you have to for interoperability. You have to support things.
Absolutely. So, I mean, but I mean, the core thing there is, well, come out and sue someone rather than sitting back and playing games about it.
Well, it's much more convenient not to actually have to talk about it in court, but merely threaten.
Time.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
and really, I mean, that's...
If you pay us, Jeff.
Yeah, because if a court rules against you, then you have nothing. So.
And the thing that really frustrates me, because in practical terms, there's not a lot in this agreement, apart from the money shifted and the marketing opportunities. The thing that really bugs me is that Novell has legitimized a whole bunch of things of Microsoft's point of view on the industry. And because I'm you know, predominantly a community volunteer contributor, the one thing that really drives me up the wall is this patent covenant for non-compensated individual developers. Because the crazy thing about that is that it basically says, okay, so the business model of open source, we're gonna sit there and say that you can have it as a toy, but you can't turn it into something that will compete with us. And if you look back, and this is difficult to say because Nat and Miguel, you know, I love to death, but you know, those are, you got Nat, who's, you know, an MIT alum, crazy ADHD guy, you've got plucky, crazy Mexican Miguel. They meet at a job interview at Microsoft and decide they want to change the open source desktop, right? And they create international GNOME support, and then they create Zimian, and then Zimian gets sold to Novell. Now they're part of Novell. Microsoft, Novell have legitimized the idea from Microsoft's point of view that that kind of story shouldn't ever happen again. Because to commercialize open source and to create opportunities in the industry through open source is not what Microsoft want to see. So they're happy to provide a patent covenant to individual non-compensated developers, but as soon as you want to play in the industry, buddy, it's time to pay up, which, you know, that's scary stuff.
Yes.
I'm scared.
It's whether or not you want to abdicate the power to think through problems to other people. You know, this is why software patents stick in so many people's craws.
Right.
Because it says, okay, we already figured this out. You're not allowed to anymore.
Right.
Like, well, you know, it'd be one thing if it was real and huge and big and it was really something non-obvious and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But it's really hard to say that you really did all that much here, you know? It's a really big problem right now.
So when did you leave Canonical?
I left at the end of July.
How come?
And I wrote a blog entry mentioning it called Swimming Upstream. And I loved the adventure of working with Canonical on creating Ubuntu. And I was keen to work on the challenge of the whole distribution stack rather than just the desktop stack that I've been working on in GNOME for so long. But, you know, after 2.5 years of doing that, I really had the urge to go back upstream to GNOME and spend a lot more time on that. You know, once you're working for a company doing open source stuff, you end up focusing pretty much solely on the company's view of the open source world. And I wanted to go back up the stack and spend much more time on GNOME. So I've got a couple of projects that I'm working on there, including the GNOME Mobile and Embedded Initiative, which is a new thing for us. There's been bits and pieces of GNOME technology used in various devices like the OLPC XO machine. Their Sugar interface is built on GNOME technology. The Nokia 770 internet tablet, there's a whole bunch of GNOME stuff in there. And recently, FIC, which is a Taiwanese original device manufacturer, have created a fully open phone platform that runs a GTK-based system on there. So there's a lot of interest and work being done in the mobile embedded space around GNOME. So we've put together a whole bunch of these companies to create sort of a united front on doing user interface and user experience stuff using the GNOME technologies for mobile platforms. So that's really exciting. It's amazing stuff.
Is this going to be your own company, or are you working with somebody, or what's?
No, so this is something that I'm doing sort of in the context of the GNOME community and as part of the GNOME Foundation board. Cool. I've also started my own company called War Partners. We actually had the launch party for that last week. And
where was my invite?
Where was your invite, dude? you can't catch a bus to Sydney, man. Not even a cab.
Are you sure?
Sounds like a party worth going to Sydney for, I have to say.
So we're doing strategic consulting and industry development stuff around open source. So I get to plow a bunch of my time into doing that stuff around both the GNOME project and also the Australian open source industry, which is an exciting place to be.
Very exciting. Very cool.
Mm.
So how did you... So you said you had been messing around with Windows for a long time before you discovered Linux. I mean, what was the story with that? How long were you using that?
Oh, dude.
That's a universal story. I was messing around with Windows, and then I discovered Linux.
when did you discover computers, I guess, is the question.
Oh, man, that's a really bad story as well. You know, I mean, so many of the hackers in our community get to say things like, you know, oh, man, I got a Commodore 64 when I was 5 years old. Me, I got...
Not you.
No, I got a 386 when I was 15 years old.
So you had a life until then.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
Oddly, my parents were not really... very approving of the whole computer thing. But I stuck with it, and I did a whole bunch of, scary now that I think about it, VB and ASP and all that kind of stuff development. I was doing consulting on that for a while. I actually left, it's a silly story, I left the IT industry at one point because I was so pissed off with how, you know, greedy and obnoxious it was. So I threw in my computing science and arts degree and went and started a fine arts degree in protest. Yeah.
How long did that last?
I got through half of that degree and then I started really getting into the open source stuff and you know, meeting all these people and getting into GNOME and stuff like that. And at that point I had the problem of I actually started making money with computing stuff and ended up doing industry stuff instead.
I think in many ways programming is like an art. I mean, it is a creative act, much like painting, let's say. A little more structured.
So I go back and forth on that. I think it can be an art for people who are fairly far along in it, and depending on the kind of program they're doing.
As they write, but they're very expressive in what they're writing.
Yeah, and sort of the creative angle, but right. It's sometimes I think programming is just programming. You know, a for loop is a for loop.
You're of the typing school.
Yeah, sometimes I am. And maybe it's just I'm a bad programmer.
There is a lot of typing involved, I have to admit.
Yeah.
That's soured me on it.
I never got to the art kind of flow in my programming.
Interesting.
When I joined the GNOME project, I, you know, met all these people who were doing such amazing stuff that I decided I'm not going to embarrass myself by actually writing any code. I'm going to help in other ways.
Oh, you don't code.
So that's... Well, I try not to embarrass myself by doing so. And on occasions I will, but most of my contributions to the community have been through things like release management of GNOME and things like that. So I try to help in every other possible way because there are so many fantastic coders that I would just look like a complete, you know, drip.
Hey, it's okay. Visual Basic isn't that bad.
Oh, man.
ASP. Well, that's interesting. So you're an open source developer who doesn't develop.
Yeah.
It's called a manager.
Manager. Well, somebody's got to do it.
Yeah.
So people keep calling me a pointy head freedom lover.
I think it says that actually on your Skype profile in Spanish, however.
At the moment it says Buenos días, amantes de la libertad.
Sí.
Good morning, freedom lovers in Spanish.
Good morning, freedom lovers.
I love going to Spain. Going to Spain is like this massive free software love injection. They are so passionate about there.
Isn't that great?
Oh, it's awesome.
Well, you make it sound almost dirty. When you were with Ubuntu, it seems like you were all over the place. I mean, it's like one day I'd see you in San Francisco, then I'd see you in London, then I'd see you here, then I'd see you there. I began to think that maybe you were twins.
Well, apparently, you were very kind in awarding me the Google O'Reilly Evangelist thing.
Oh, yeah, that was last year, though, you know?
Yeah,
what have you done since then, you know?
That was pretty rad. But that was just for, like, Ubuntu.
Well, you should tell them what that is. I mean, you should be proud of that. So O'Reilly, for years, and we're just a partner with O'Reilly on this, O'Reilly for years has done this open source award at the open source convention in Portland, and there's some categories that we make up. You know, we find some people we think have done a remarkable work over the last X years or whatever, and we try to recognize them for that. And Jeff won one of those because he was literally almost omniscient. Well, not omniscient, omnipresent. You know, it's like you'd go somewhere and they're Jeff B.
So. Or his twin.
So he was either stalking me, in which case, you know, stop. But, but you know, it was pretty remarkable. So we gave him an award, which I think was $5,000, right?
Mm.
And a very pretty sort of thing, arty thing. Do you still have the arty thing? You know,
No. I was pre-arty thing. I got a nice framed certificate.
You got a plaque.
Yeah. But I saw the arty thing this year. It looked like it broke in half.
Yeah, it was something. It was like this acrylic, beautiful thing that was and very pointy, so you could like kill somebody with it. So, you know, handy, you know, in that way.
So I spent a lot of time traveling to talk about Ubuntu and what we were doing and, you know, why it was interesting and cool. And I love the intersection between, you know, developers, community, business development, stuff like that. So it's kind of my natural element. And It was great. One of my favorite tour was what we called the Badger tour after the Breezy Badger release went out, and we had the Badger dance. Have you guys seen the Badger
dance?
Yes. Oh man,
it's rather catchy.
It's crazy. Every Ubuntu release, we actually had a dance that we made up. But for Breezy Badger, the dance was, you know, it was already there. It was fully prepared.
I'm going to go to that page right now and we're gonna listen to that sound.
You want me to do it? I can do it. I can play it over here. We have the technology if we really want to drive people crazy.
Did you hear that?
No, but I can play it.
Did that come over?
I can actually play it on the via the high quality. Okay, that's enough of that. How do I stop it? Oh, thank you.
I kill it.
I killed the badger.
Death to the badger.
So how did Pia feel about all this badgering?
Oh, she wasn't happy with the traveling. Not at all. But I managed to convince the Ubuntu folks to have the one of our first Ubuntu developer summits in Australia in 2005. And we actually had the best badger dance ever there.
Mass badger dance?
You have to wear
No, it was just me and Mark. But someone made a bet with Mark, and I had no idea what the terms were. But
I'm searching YouTube right now.
they said if Mark does something or other, then he has to dance in public. And Mark, amazingly enough, for all of the public speaking he does, he hates public speaking, and he hates getting up in front of audiences. So on the very last night of the Ubuntu Developer Summit, we went to see Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy on its opening night here in Australia. And so I ran up the aisle at the cinema and grabbed Mark and said, come with me, and started running down the aisle. And then he realized what was going on, and he kind of froze and started stepping back. But, you know, in front of everyone in the cinema, he kind of had to do it. So he came down, and we're at the front of the cinema doing the badger dance with the entire company yelling out, badgers, 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 in front of the cinema.
Shuttleworth!
Unfortunately, just as we were finishing off, the very first trailer for Star Wars came on, and everyone
shut
in the cinema was so angry with this. Like, get off! We're trying to watch the trailer!
No, don't mess with the Star Wars trailers.
Yeah, that's right. So we had to run for our lives. But it was great. It was lots of fun.
I've searched YouTube. There is no existing video. You're safe.
You must have it somewhere.
There are photos.
Maybe I should have gone to Flickr instead.
Yeah.
You know, a badger dance has got to be video. You know, well, can you describe the badger dance?
So you actually have to do exactly what is in the cartoon. So each of the badgers, they do this kind of, you know, almost star jump kind of thing where you bend your knees and move your arms about. And then when it comes up to the mushroom bit, you have to put your hands over your head. It's very YMCA, except your badgers, mushrooms, and snakes. Oh, there is a video of it. Actually, there is. There's a video of us in a upmarket restaurant in Sydney with half the team doing the badger dance.
Oh, I've got to find that.
Make with the link.
It was very bizarre.
It may not be online. It may be one of those home videos.
You make it sound dirty.
Tommy home Lee video. And Pamela.
It was actually the secret thing in the whole Kevin Federline thing. He did a badger dance.
It was a badger dance.
He had to divorce him after that.
So was Ubuntu a fun place to work? Canonical?
Yeah, it was. Crazy place to work. I mean, you have... all of us worked completely virtually.
I was going
to
say, there's no central office, is there? No.
There's now an office in London for the biz dev folks, and there's a... strangely enough, our support center was in Montreal. Hmm. I know why, but yeah.
Ubuntu.
So there's a couple of offices, but pretty much everyone, all of the hackers work from home. And it's such an amazing crowd of people. But you interact with them all the time over email and IRC until the developer summits, which, Chris, you went to the Mountain View developer summit, didn't you?
For a few moments, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy. When you get these people together, it's completely bonkers.
It's pretty remarkable, yeah. So.
You know, a group of people who are Extremely sociable. Like, I mean, from my point of view in the open source community, you have to have social skills to be able to make it work. Or you have to have people around you who have social skills to be your kind of conduit kind of thing. But, you know, everyone in Canonical is crazy, you know, awesome to hang around, and so many weird backgrounds and stuff like that. It's such an awesome group. So whenever we have the meetings, it's madness.
Yeah, we had, I think, like 7 conference rooms and this big main space area, and it was just like teeming with Ubuntu people. It was really cool. I'm looking at a picture of Jeff Waugh as doing the Badger Dance right now.
Oh, really? You found it?
Oh, yeah, Jeff sent it to me. I just chatted it over to you. So
okay, I'll be busy in a moment, too.
I'm like, wow, there's... It's like, how can we work that into the podcast somehow? You know, like, can we control?
Well,
the
I did find, you know,
face?
I found we could make it the album art. I found the desktop Ubuntu original Ubuntu desktop as well.
Oh, so you did?
It's going to be a difficult choice, the sexy one. So it's going to be a very difficult choice. I don't know which we'll put in there as the album art.
What did you search on to find it? That should be enough.
I don't remember, but I'll tell you, it's a blog. Some blog has it, and complaining of porn in his Ubuntu desktop. It's not
people when it first came out, Slashdot, this was a few weeks after we did the preview release, there was a Slashdot story about, you know, figured out Mark Shuttleworth's business model for Ubuntu, porn distribution via a Linux operating system. Yeah,
I searched for Ubuntu desktop breasts, and and then I pressed I'm feeling lucky. And I think that's all you need to know.
Chris, I've just given you a link to a picture of some of the Canonical team doing the Badger Dance in a ritzy Sydney restaurant.
We're having way too much fun here when the audience is going, but I want to see that.
Gosh, you know, isn't that great for our listeners? Do something for that. So let's talk more. Pia is your wife. You got married over the last couple of years. That's great. She's tolerant of your startupness.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She's a geek.
Got married.
She's the cover girl, the Australian geek cover girl.
Yeah. We actually got married the day before LinuxConf AU in Canberra because we had a whole bunch of friends from around the world coming to that, and we thought it would be unfair to make them come to Australia twice. She's been the president and vice president of Linux Australia, and she actually started War Partners about 9 months ago.
That's more about being tolerant of her.
Well, so she's the schmoozer, and I'm the showman. She's awesome at like the whole one-on-one thing, and she has to bear with me doing the showman stuff. But yeah, no, we have so much fun with it. It's great. We're definitely partners in crime.
It's nice to actually... have somebody who understands what you do.
For sure.
Even if she doesn't support. But she's organizing LCA, and she's part of your WA partners, so that's neat.
Yeah,
that's
great.
Can work together, yeah.
If you have a baby, it'll be like a super Linux baby.
We're trying really hard not to plan that at the moment.
Oh, then you'll have one. Good, excellent.
You know what's funny? Like, We have so many people in the open source world who, you know, started like 10, 15 years ago. They've got married, they're having kids and all this kind of stuff. So there's this sort of group that have come through in that time frame that are kind of growing through life and stuff together. And I just wonder, like, when we all get to retirement age, like, there's going to be this free software renaissance where all these hackers are free again and they can start working on stuff.
You might
without,
be right.
I think that's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, they're starting to get sleep again, and they can actually start programming. That's an interesting point of view. You might be right.
Yeah, no, I'm totally buying that. I have another kid coming in December, so.
Oh man.
So is it? Do you find that that you all are roughly the same age in the open source movement?
You know, this is actually one of the reasons I started the Summer of Code. I was getting tired of seeing all the same people. I mean, I they're all very nice, and I like.
Is everybody in their late 20s, early 30s, roughly, or
maybe it's just what I'm seeing? I mean, other than Mad Dog, you know. I mean,
Mad Dog is he's the grand old man.
He's got the beard, you know. So
he's really only 40, but he looks ancient because of the beard.
You've got like the kind of the old Unix hacker set. And then there's this group of people who kind of grew up through the Linux thing. So there's like a 15-year. I guess it actually maps well to generations, really. So there's a generation of people around there, but there are still a heck of a lot of kids getting into it at uni and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Is there now a whole group of 20-somethings who are involved?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. They add vitality to the projects.
Yeah, I'm still not part of the GNOME Old Farts Club. We actually have a official group.
Oh, that's great.
But I'm still not part of that. But, man, these kids.
Yeah, they can blow your doors off sometimes.
At the Summer of Code, did you see some really spectacular talent that you're looking
for? Yeah, it's kind of appalling. I feel like, you know, more of a fossil than I do normally. Yeah. And it's like, we had one kid, he was just adding the simplest of features to GCC. Well, not the simplest, I mean, a feature to GCC, which is the compiler. And he was going into all the things he had to do and da-da-da-da-da. And all the things he had to learn. And this was like over a period of like, you know, 8 weeks. You know, 9 weeks that he did this all, and I'm just like going, that's awesome. Yeah. That's just amazing, you know, that he was able to do all this. Because, you know, GCC is like this.
We used to be able to stay up all night programming.
Yeah.
Keep all those threads in our head.
Yeah.
And live on beer and Jolt Cola.
Pizza.
Pizza.
I used to have pizza delivered a day.
Yeah.
And now I look like it. But back then.
Slender, slim.
A little rubber person, for God's sakes.
I have to say that's one of the disadvantages for me working for Canonical is that I gained quite a bit of weight in my time at Canonical, which I'm now trying to get rid of.
Why is
well,
that?
Well, if you do enough of this badger dancing, you'll...
Yeah, it sounds like you had an exercise program.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I mean, just because you didn't take advantage of it.
I can't believe how much travel puts on the pounds.
That's true.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. You can't eat well on the road.
No.
It's very hard.
That's harsh.
Yeah.
But also working from home, there's kind of this temptation of... You can actually work 18 hours a day.
And the refrigerator's within arm's reach.
Yeah.
Not a good thing. What else is on the mind of Jeff Waugh? Or J-Dub, as you're called.
So, Perky Pants.
PerkyPants.com.
So his email .org.
I should say .org. Very important.
Yeah. His pants are an organization. People are probably like, what the hell are they talking about? So Jeff's email address is jdub@perkypants.org. So
and his blog is perkypants.org. Let's not forget that either. Yeah.
And the thing about the pants thing, like among, and this will sound incredibly stupid, but among Australian and New Zealand hackers, for some reason, this pants thing has been going around. And I actually asked Jeff what the story was with this, because all the Australian hackers I know, like Karsten Heitzler, who created Enlightenment, and Simon Hormons, we're always talking about pants on, pants off, pants on, pants on is like a way of saying hi or look out, you know, and pants off is something else altogether. So, Jeff, you want to explain that?
Pants on, pants off. Yeah. Is this kind of a warped Karate Kid reference here?
I guess. And they had like a little desktop gadget, and it would listen on the network, and somebody would switch the state of the gadget from pants on to pants off or pants off to pants on.
No,
and
I so want
you get,
that.
Like, you get those little pop-ups, pants are now off, pants are now
see,
on.
That's not something you're ever going to see in Windows Vista, I can tell you right now.
Well, yeah, but for a whole different reason, you know, because it costs a lot more there. So you got to take your pants. All right, Jeff, you can explain to us. What's the story with pants, please? Tell us.
Look, I mean, my pants joke background started in my high school drama class. We had all sorts of ridiculous pants jokes, but it kind of went out of control at the Sydney Linux Users Group and when LinuxConf AU 2001 happened, because we got this group of people from the University of New South Wales, like Rasta, Simon, Horman, Conrad Parker, and they had all of these crazy pants jokes of their own. And then a few other people had sort of come into this group, and the pants jokes just went crazy. It was like this super collider of pantage. And Conrad Parker wrote an init script for pants, so you could go pants start, pants stop, and you know it would change the state of your pants. And so there were all sorts of ridiculous jokes.
Did you put that in RC, or did you just leave it around, lying around on your hard drive?
No, he actually made an RPM package of pants, the init script, and bizarrely enough, we actually we ported it to Debian at one point.
Does it put it in the profile? Where does it go?
No, when you're spinning it up, it says pants are now on.
Yeah, yeah. Because you can't do your computing without wearing the appropriate attire.
That's right. It's like and armor.
You get electrocuted.
Well, especially if it's a laptop.
Oh yeah, these days. Mm-hmm. We had some concerns at one point. Tom May decided that the Debian world also needed the pants init script because you can't use Debian without the appropriate attire. So we ported it to Debian. And then when he uploaded it to the Debian archive, it was rejected by the FTP master. Not just because it was silly, but also because it depended on a package called Popularity Contest, which reports back the most popular packages in the distribution. So having a package depend on that is kind of cheating.
Yeah, that's not a good dependency. Yeah, the most popular ever.
Wow. It was rejected outright, and that's been a stain on Tom's career ever since.
But that's clever. I think that's a clever hack. Who says open source folks don't have more fun? Actually, no one says that. Everybody knows they have more fun than everybody else. That's just plain obvious. So how would you, now that you're no longer with Canonical, but looking from the outside, how would you say Ubuntu has lived up to Mark's original goal, and how would you like to see it develop going forward? What else does Ubuntu need?
Well, it's kind of in the uncharted waters kind of place now because Mark planned a few years out and had some ideas about what he wanted to do with the business and the distribution. So we've kind of passed that original kind of plan and it's really successful now. So
it happened too fast. You didn't have time to.
It did. It really did.
Plan the next steps.
It was like double speed in terms of what Mark wanted to achieve for the business. But so he's working on things like Launchpad, and there's the Ubuntu derivatives now. So there's things like Edubuntu and Kubuntu and Zubuntu
and
so many of them.
Kubuntu.
It's been interesting the last sort of month to see the different controversies that have popped up, and one of the big ones at the moment is whether Ubuntu should have proprietary drivers used by default for all of the sexy graphic stuff that's going on at the moment. And I think that's sort of a bit of a trouble spot. Ubuntu needs to be much more forceful about our freedoms than concerned about making sure that the hardware works.
I do. Isn't there a derivative distribution that does, in fact, have all of those drivers installed to make it easy, right, for new users?
Yeah, so there's a couple that have come out that are really interesting. There's this thing called Linux Mint, and I don't know what Mint means, but Mint comes with all of
Well,
the
they don't know what pants means.
So it comes with, Flash and Acrobat Reader and all that kind of stuff.
All the proprietary stuff, yeah.
Yeah. And then there's another one called GNU Sense, GNEWSENSE, which is the FSF-approved version of Ubuntu that has all of the proprietary stuff taken out, the proprietary hardware drivers.
So there is some proprietary stuff in Ubuntu.
Yeah.
So it's kind of in the middle between Mint and Sense.
Yeah, but it only provides hardware drivers. The default CD, the only stuff that's not free software is just hardware drivers. And the rationale behind that is that it's much more important that people use free software and that it works on their hardware than, the specifics of the various, legal gray areas and stuff. I think that we're getting to a point where those gray areas are not really very gray anymore. They're getting pretty black and white. And so Ubuntu might find itself in hot water, or the community will just be more and more frustrated at that kind of approach.
Well, and I think that a lot of education needs to be done. If you're going to take this stand, you have to explain why we're using this to one side, to the FSF side, and why we're not using these to the folks who say, well, I just want it to work.
Yeah, that's right. And to their credit, they have a thing in the distribution that tells you what's going on with the proprietary drivers and explains why they can't be fully supported and all that sort of stuff.
Well, and you could say this here. Why do you keep the things like Flash and other proprietary software out of Ubuntu?
Yeah, because it's a funny line there. You know, where do you cross that line? Right. And really, from what Mark has said, it's all about hardware enablement.
Right, and you don't want Flash, you don't want Java, you don't want Real Player.
And there are Java. Actually,
hooray, Java!
Actually, yeah. Java's open source. That's right. Yes. It's okay now. Is that done? Is that like a done deal? So now you can start rolling Java in.
That's a good question. I know that they've said they've done some things. I haven't actually gone to the website recently to see if it's there. I'm sure it is. You know, but I'm not sure it is. I mean, an enterprising listener.
The license is now on the code, and the next release of Ubuntu will have Java in main.
Great.
That's
fantastic.
Holy crap, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty remarkable.
And I think if you're, especially with Ubuntu, where you're kind of pitching yourself towards novice users, and I recommend it to all our novice users, there is some incentive to do as, say, Mandriva does and give people all the drivers because they don't know how to get them otherwise. I mean, I think a lot of people coming from Windows say, but wait, it won't play DivX. I can't play MP3s. What kind of operating system is that? We're used to a proprietary world.
So this is, the media players are a real pain in the butt, but there's a lot of funny little areas that you don't think about when you start your computer, what's going on. So, like, often your network cards, you'll be loading microcode into them.
Right.
And, you know, the same goes for, like, half the cards in your system. So it's is it okay that microcode isn't open source, even though it's being loaded by the operating system at runtime? Well, is it just really loading it into firmware? Is it okay? And these issues are really, they get really sticky. I think there are a lot of gray areas still. And that's kind of a problem, to be honest with you. So
I think the gray areas are less about legal and more philosophical.
Yeah,
legal ones are starting to get a lot more clear.
Yeah,
they're a lot more clear than they were.
But the firmware is a really fascinating one because it's not necessarily software that would be useful to us that we could change apart from making the hardware do different things. But then it's not actually part of the kernel. So in the Linux sense, it's not really covered by any GPL issues because it runs on the hardware. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons why Ubuntu ships it, and I'm not about it.
It's weird, too, because for things like wireless cards, this comes up a lot because different countries have different standards for wireless radio powers, and so the software is expected to change that, but some countries, they actually make it illegal for the software to make it higher than that country's allowed limit. So if you can change it through the software, you get into this weird sort of catch-22 that you sometimes find in software licenses, so... It's just it's challenging. So
the multimedia stuff is the next kind of frontier of problems there. It so sucks that you install a Linux machine and it's like, well, you can play DVDs if you do and insert like ridiculous stupid stuff that you have to do. Yeah. So that's kind of scary.
Well, it's weird. It makes everyone feel like a Zune user. It's like, oh look, now I can't play anything.
No one feels like a Zune user
because there's no one buying it.
There are no Zune users. I have one right. I'm holding one right now.
Oh, did you like it? I mean, no. Did you try it?
You have to. You have to. In my job, I have to review these things. I'm sending it back.
That's true.
Any minute now. There's a lot to like about it, except for
the screen's pretty.
Screen's pretty, and I mean, it does a lot of cool things. But it's the real obvious issues are there.
How did they go with the Wi-Fi sharing interface? Because that seems to be like the major innovation about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a start. I mean, the idea, the notion that you've got Wi-Fi built into it's great, but can you buy music with it? No. Can you surf the web with it? No. The only thing you can do is send copy-protected files from one Zune to another.
You can stream copy-protected files from one Zune to another.
Yeah, well, you send it, but you only get 3 plays or 3 days to listen to it. So it's...
Oh, yeah.
There are a lot of things wrong with it. Really, chiefly, the things most wrong with it are things that hurt Microsoft, that they don't support their own Microsoft store.
That's crazy.
If you bought a lot of music from Yahoo or Napster or Microsoft, you can't play it in the Zune. You have to start over. It's it's been a nonsensical device for anybody who's ever bought anything in a music store. You can't play them. You're out of order.
That's a terrible bait and switch for their partners.
That's exactly what it is, yeah.
When will people learn?
And then, of course, there's the really, really nasty thing, which was that there's a tax paid to Universal Music for every Zoom sold.
Oh, really? This is one of those, huh?
Well, yeah, Universal got Microsoft to concede that, yes, Zooms will be used for piracy, and so every single Zoom that's sold, we have to get a little cut of. And
they're kind of like the Novell of music.
Yeah, now having done that, they're going to Apple, and they've just announced that, yes, we plan to do the same thing with the iPods as soon as our contracts with Apple run out. So thank you, Microsoft. Well done.
Well done.
It was, you know, it's easy when you don't sell any to give Universal a few bucks, but...
I have to say, one of the biggest mistakes with the Zoom, in my opinion, was that they've been actively trying to get people to not say squirting music from Zoom to Zoom.
They're trying now because Balmer started that. They don't want anybody to say squirting.
No, they don't want people to say squirting. Yeah, so well, I'm just going to squirt you some music. It's no, rude. Don't say squirt.
It's rude.
Surely that's like the...
But it's so clever.
Yeah, like that's got to be the ultimate social hack for a device like that, is coming up with the best verb.
Squirt's not a bad verb. I mean, it's a little dirty.
Well, it's extremely accurate, right? It explicitly says what you're doing. I'm going to squirt some music at you. You know, that's okay. I get it. You know, look, now I've got music. Oh, you got music all over my Zoom. Ew. Okay, so maybe squirt's not the greatest word, but still, it's handy.
Do not squirt your Jessica Simpson at me.
Oh, you got Kevin Federline all over my Zoom. Although I'd imagine there's no, you know, listening requirements on that, right?
I mean, you know, obviously, when Microsoft makes a product, it's all about commerce. I mean, there's no question about anything but commerce. It's kind of the opposite of the open source movement. But how much commerce do you think about when you're developing open source products? Is it none? Is it 5%? 10%?
So I have. I guess, I mean, I don't really have a different point of view on this than most open source developers, but I think it's kind of a view that there's very different kind of sides of the line. I think a lot of the younger hackers who are getting involved have a very sort of anti-corporate kind of approach. Like, it's cool to be anti-money and stuff.
Right.
For some reason, we've managed to message it kind of wrongly there somehow, and that's kind of this cool thing. From my point of view, and the work that I've done around GNOME and also Ubuntu as well, freedom and commerce work together really, really well, because the more freedom you have, the more opportunities for commerce you have, and you can only really distribute freedom very well when commerce is a part of it. And I look at GNOME and think about, you know, what we were doing in the GNOME 1.0 days and what we're doing now, and GNOME would not have been as successful as a project if we hadn't had the commercial uptake from companies like Sun and Novell and Red Hat and so on. And you look at a project like Apache and its success, and you can see that bond of commerce and freedom and how commerce can enhance the opportunities for people to come in touch with it. If we didn't have our commercial distributors for GNOME, it would be extraordinarily difficult for us to have that audience at all.
It's not about paying developers. It's about reaching an audience.
That's right, yeah. And certainly paying for development resources is really important. And so for companies like Red Hat and Novell, they commit an enormous amount of resources to what we're doing. And increasingly, we're looking at companies like Nokia, who are contributing a lot to the GNOME platform, and some of the smaller consulting companies working around embedded stuff. There's a huge amount of resources that they're putting into place there, and providing opportunities for open source developers to, you know, have work to do their open source development.
I think it's kind of interesting that you say it's the young people that are the anti-commercial purists, and the older folks who are the ones who say, no, we've got to work with the marketplace. It's almost the opposite of what you'd expect. You think of young people growing up with things like Microsoft and the Zune would be more comfortable with that. But they're in reaction to it, I guess.
Yeah, in one way it's reactionary. In one way there's kind of that cool anti-corporate right. kind of thing. And the other thing, too, is that all of us old dudes have to deal with, you know...
paying the bills.
Children yeah, and mortgages and stuff like that.
That's true. So. Maybe a little more practical in that regard, yeah.
Luckily, the licenses are complex enough to... No.
You know, it's funny. I just got a 50-inch plasma TV, a Pioneer, and I'm reading through the manual in the back. What do I find? The GPL. The thing is running
nice.
The thing is running on Linux. I mean, first I see the OpenSSH... license. I think, wow,
really?
They're using SSH. And then I read on, and there's the GPL.
Dude, get a command line on your TV.
Isn't that awesome? Well, it's running Linux. They say it's running Linux.
At that point, I think you call it your computer.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's a big screen computer. Maybe a little expensive for a computer. But it shows you, I mean, Linux really is everywhere now. And it does coexist perfectly well in the commercial world.
Yeah.
In fact, it's great that a company like Pioneer would say, you know, what's the right operating system for this? Is it Windows CE? No. What is it? Is it a real-time OS? No. You know, is POSIX? What is it? It's Linux.
And you look at, like, you know, Linux is running on the very, very smallest of embedded devices.
Right.
All the way up to, you know, 7 out of the top 10 fastest supercomputers on the planet. This is like, it's... I don't remember who said it, but Linux is a species.
I like,
you know,
that.
You can't, in terms of you know, necessarily the whole competition thing, like, you know, people always using war terms about Microsoft, right, and Linux like that. But Linux is like something else entirely. It's a whole different species.
It occupies a niche, an ecological niche. Well, we've talked for a long time. We've talked your ear off, Jeff, and I thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Yep. We really
no problem. It's been fun.
It's been a real pleasure. Very interesting stuff, and wish you all the best. Jeff's blog is online at perkypants.org.
Perkypants. Pants on.
Buenos dias, amantes de la libertad.
Patalones.
And for more information about LCA or linuxconf.au, PerkyPants is a great place to start. But also lca2007.linux.org.au for the conference program.
Estoy buscando mis pantalones.
And I think on that note, we should wrap this up. Thank you, Jeff.
Rock on, Deuce. Thanks very much.
And that was Jeff Waugh, a former Ubuntu guy. And
Ubuntu.
Ubuntu. Ubuntu. Ubuntu's really been doing well, hasn't it?
Well, I think so. And I think it's because they actually... really like their users. You know,
they're friendly.
You think I'm kidding, but it's like, you know, you should just go and talk to the people who create software sometimes.
Yeah.
I honestly think they don't like their users. You know, it's like whenever you hear like the cup holder jokes and the text board jokes, that's people saying, I don't like the people who pay me.
Yeah, unfortunately. I think also a lot of people get into technology and computers especially, and programming especially, because they kind of really don't want to see people. They kind of want to hunker down with their machines.
Yeah, so a bunch
I know
of
I'm one of them.
Is why that's not true, Leo. Come on.
Well,
you're clearly a people person.
Don't go too far down that road.
Yeah, people skills.
Yeah, maybe. But Ubuntu, not only do they like their users, they've marketed. I mean, in a way that really is effective, and they make it easy to get. You know, the free CD and all of that.
Yeah, so if you go to ship.ubuntu.com, you can get a Ubuntu CD just shipped right to your house or five.
Technically, you think? I mean, it's based on Debian, so it's a good distro. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it as a distro, right?
Oh, no. Technically speaking, it's a very solid distro. And the nice thing about it also is that, you know, they're a little more cutting edge than Debian is, right? So they'll have things that are a little more fun, a little more up to date. And it's one of the reasons I first tried it, because, you know, I like Debian a lot, but Debian Stable is old.
Right.
It feels really crufty. It's like listening to the Bee Gees when you want to listen to Nine Inch Nails, man.
Well, the other thing I like is they don't load it up with a lot of different kinds of word processors and different kinds of browsers. They kind of, you know, find the one that's kind of accepted to be the one,
right,
and they put it
and
in
And if
there.
You want those things, you just type in apt-get install whatever, but, you know.
And I love apt-get. Any distro that uses apt-get gets my vote.
Yeah, it's like an extra, you know, thing.
That's just great. Chris DeBona, congratulations on the new baby. Glad you're back. I know there
and
are a lot.
And thanks for your patience, everybody. I know a lot of you have been emailing and... You know, I've tried to reply back to all of you.
People love it. They love the show. And we're just glad it's back. We'll see you next week.
We have a plan, which you'll hear about next week.
We have a plan, a way to give you more flossing than ever before, which wouldn't be too hard. Great, Chris, great to talk to you. We'll see you next week. Yes, next week on Floss Weekend.